Orioles beat the Blue Jays 12-2 last night, back in action this evening, but they put up so many runs and made the Masson guys work so hard last night. They're giving them tonight off, as it's an Apple Plus game. So joining us now, courtesy of the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline, part of the Masson crew, it's our friend Big Ben McDonald. And Ben, thank you as always for joining us. We appreciate it. Let's start with Adley Rutschman. And he struggled down the stretch a year ago. I know yesterday's one game, but we loved what we saw from him in the batter's box. Not just the home run, but punching that single the other way. You feeling as good as we are about Adley?
Yeah, always good to be with you guys. You know, I was lucky enough to be in uniform way back at the beginning of spring training in February. And it was just something, or at the end of February, I should say. There was something different about Adley in previous couple of years. Like, I found him to be much more open. He seemed to be having fun. He seemed to be very energetic. Not that he wasn't before, but it was like a little bit more than usual. You know, I didn't know what to expect after his struggles in the second half. But as I started to watch him take batting practice, as I started to watch him hit in lives, and as I started to watch the very first spring game of the year, you could clear that Adley was back to being Adley. And he was in a really good place when he got to spring training. And you mentioned the backside of the field and hit the ball the other day. That's what I noticed right away. There was a conscious effort to drive the ball with authority to the backside of the field, whether he's hitting left-handed or right-handed. And he was doing that in spring training. So it looked totally different to me than what we saw at the end of the year last year. And so this was a player in its third year that, you know, remember, Adley had never struggled athletically at anything in his life at any level. I mean, he had those first 10 days or 2 weeks when he first got called up 3 years ago where things didn't go his way. But after that, everything, you know, he's just a very, very talented player. And so in some ways, he got punched in the mouth for the first time, and he failed at the big league level. And he got himself in a rut last year, and it's not uncommon for younger players, and he just couldn't pull himself out of it. He got in the funk of starting to chase bad balls. You know, that was always Adley's strong point, as you guys know. He didn't attack balls that were out of the strike zone very often in his career. And then last year, the second half, that's what got him in trouble, you know. And so it spiraled on him, and it happened. And he made a few adjustments, but he got back to attacking balls over the white part of the plate. And well, look, when he does that, those are the kind of results of what you see yesterday.
The Orioles brought in Tyler O'Neill to help mitigate the loss of Anthony Santon there. And O'Neill had a pretty perfect Orioles debut, Ben. He kept the home run streak alive on opening day, went 3-for-3, also had a couple of walks. What are you expecting him to bring to this lineup?
Yeah, that, you know, you homered six consecutive opening days. That's insane. Like, that's insane. You know what I mean? Like, it was already a major league record. He just extended it yesterday, you know. Yeah, on base all five times. You know, I think what he's going to bring, and I love Anthony Santander. I think we all do. Birdland loves Santander. And he was a solid defender. I don't think the metrics favored Anthony. I thought he was better than what the metrics said he was. But Tyler O'Neill, there's no doubt, is an upgrade defensively, first of all, in the outfield, because he's going to cover a little bit more ground, maybe a little bit better throwing arm than what Santander got. So you got that piece of it. I think what you hope he brings, obviously, is pop. And that's why Mike Elias went and got him. And we know when Tyler O'Neill gets 400-plus at-bats, the two or three years that he's done that, he's hit 30 or more home runs. And I think the idea is keeping him healthy, keeping him on the field. We know he's had a little bit of a nicked-up history of getting injured from time to time. But if he gets 400-450 at-bats, especially in the new Camden Yards that we're going to see, he's good for 30 home runs. And I think in the aggregate, you make it up. And, you know, there's been a lot talked about Heston Kerstad. And Heston Kerstad, in my opinion, gets 200 at-bats, 250 at-bats. He's quite capable of hitting you 12 to 15 home runs, I believe. And so that's how you make up for 44 home runs that Anthony Santander hit. So you may see a platoon-type situation out there, and Kerstad could play right field. He could DH. He could, you know, he could get some pinch hits. He could do things like that to accumulate 250 at-bats. And so that's what Tyler O'Neill is going to bring to the table, is the long ball. Yes, he's going to swing and miss from time to time. We know that. But he's going to hit the ball out of the ballpark like he did yesterday, too.
Ben, we were doing a show while the game was going on, so I couldn't watch as closely as I wanted. And then we had the Maryland game last night, so I did not go back and rewatch. But Dominguez didn't look great to me, and it almost looked like he was flying open. And you could tell that everything was going to be like sort of high and outside, because he didn't. I don't know. Again, I'm not a pitching expert, but I didn't think he was keeping his shoulder in. And he obviously had a really rough spring. He got away with it with the double play ball. But anything you're seeing from him?
Yeah, I mean, I made that comment on the air last night, and that's kind of what I was seeing, okay, too, that that the front shoulder, the glove shoulder, is always your steering wheel. And as you go down the slope as a pitcher, the most important thing is you keep that front side in the glove as long as you can keep it there. And I feel like he is a little bit east to west right now. He's pulling off. And if you have a gradual pull, you yank it down and away. And if you fly open really quick as a pitcher, you get really east to west in a hurry, then that's when it's arm side, it's left arm side up. And so that's what I'm seeing out of him. That's what I saw a little bit in some of the spring games that I got to see, was that I love, and I mean absolutely love, the arm strength, right? I mean, he gets it through there. I mean, he was up to 99 yesterday, and we know he can be a valuable piece. And honestly, he's going to have to be a valuable piece this year. He just, from a mechanic standpoint, mechanically, he's got to get it figured out. And I know he's working hard with Drew French and Plassmeyer, and they're trying to get him figured out. And it was a perfect situation for him, right? I mean, there's no such thing as a no-leverage right. situation at the big league level. That was a lower-leverage situation. We can say that. And so it was a good spot to get him in. And so hopefully he's going to get that figured out, because we know Bautista's not going to be able to save games in back-to-back days. The Orioles have already said that. So there's got to be somebody else at the back end of that bullpen, whether it's Soto, whether it's Dominguez, whoever it is, somebody's going to have to close from time to time. And it could be Yennier Cano, it could be Keegan Aiken too. So we'll see. But, yeah, this is a big piece of that bullpen, and Dominguez needs to get right.
We're talking with Ben McDonald, Inside Access, here on the Fan. Ben, I wanted to, again, small sample size, and I know he only had one hit. He struck out a couple times, but we like Jackson Holliday's at-bats. What did you think of him yesterday?
Yeah, when he got rid of that big high leg kick, and I was honestly concerned when he came, and I get it. I mean, that's how he always hit. He had success. His dad hit like that years ago. And so that's how he learned to hit, was a big high leg kick. But the truth is, at this level, with the velocities that are being created by pitchers now, you don't see many guys anymore with these big giant leg kicks. And the reason is the ball's just getting on you too fast. And so we know what he did last year toward the end of the season. He went to more of a toe tap to get in a ready position a little bit faster. And I thought he had a good spring. I thought, obviously, the finish of the season last year was great. I thought he had a good spring, more comfortable than your first spring training, like Kowser was last year, a lot more comfortable in your second spring training. You kind of know what to expect in some ways. You're a little more comfortable about what you're doing. And he had all offseason to work on that new approach that he's got. And I think yesterday was a big telltale sign. I don't know if you guys remember the count, but I think it was an 0-2 count. And he went up and got a 97-mile-an-hour fastball that wasn't even a strike. It was right above the top of the strike zone. And he hit it right back up the middle. Last year, that he would have been late on that ball times 10 because he wouldn't have got his foot down in time. But he was able to get his foot down early, being a hitting position, and go up and tackle ball to very, very top or even above the top of the strike zone and hit it for a line drive. And so it's a totally different approach. We still got to remember the kid's 21 years old. We want him to be the dude, right? Everybody wants him to be that guy. And I think one day he is going to be that guy. But he needs it back at the big league level, and he's learning a new batting stance. I think he's comfortable with it, but he seems way more comfortable to me. And look, he's going to have a lot better year this year than what he had last year. I mean, look, he's not going to go hit 280 this year. That's not going to happen. But big league average, remember, the big league average hitter hits 243. I think Jackson Holliday is quite capable this year of hitting 243 for sure and blowing the ball out of the ballpark from time to time.
Ben, something we're all hoping carries over from spring training is this team being more active on the base paths. They were just 18th in stolen bases last year. We saw Cedric Mullins take off in a first and third, nobody out. We were all for it. He got ended up getting thrown out there. But are you expecting to see this team run more?
Yes. I mean, there was a big emphasis when I was in camp for a week, and Hyder talked about that a lot in the group meetings, was we need to be a little bit more aggressive on the base pass. We have got to be able to go first to third on a base hit. We've got to be able to score from second base on a base hit. And, yes, we got to take an extra 90 every now and then. And you mentioned the Orioles didn't steal a whole lot of bases last year. And that was my knock on this Oriole offense. And it's hard to knock an offense that was fourth in baseball last year in runs per game. It was that good of an offense, even with the downturn that they had and some injuries the second half of the season. But I felt like this offense got one-dimensional last year, where when we were hitting home runs, this offense was really, really good. And I think Hyder saw that, and the others saw it too, because home runs are great. They win ball games until you're not hitting them anymore. Then how can you win a ball game, right? And to meet the teams that are the toughest to beat are the teams that can beat you multiple ways. And what I mean by that is they can play small ball with you. They can put a bunt down when they need to. They can steal a base. They can really go first to third on you. They can create a lot of havoc and put pressure on defenses. Those are the tough offenses that aren't one-dimensional. And I think that was the message in camp this year. And so, yeah, I mean, speaking of Jackson Holliday, he worked really hard on his speed. I mean, he stole five bases in spring training more than anybody. And so, and I think that's why you want Jorge Mateo to be healthy and be in there. Because if you get Jackson Holliday, Mateo, and you get Mullins going in the lineup from time to time, those guys can really pressure you up on the base pass and steal some bases. So I think you're going to see more bunts this year. I think you're going to see a little bit more small ball from time to time. Of course, the way the season started, you're going to see those long balls too.
Orioles are on Apple Plus tonight, but they'll be back on Masson tomorrow afternoon as the Orioles and Blue Jays play this four-game series. Ben McDonald, always great, man. Thank you so much for your time. Enjoy north of the border for us.
I'll do it, guys. Always great to be with you guys, and go O's.
Thank you. Go O's.
Coming up next. Oh, by the way, coming up at bottom of the hour, Jason's been hearing some buzz about someone the Ravens could be really interested in the draft. We will talk Ravens draft. Greg Peterson's going to join us at 5. He's got his best bets for the NCAA tournament. But coming up next, you know, the people, I saw some people last week, and they said they missed X Factors.
Up in the casino up there in Connecticut?
Yeah, there were people that listened on the Odyssey app, which you can listen, you know, chapter, verse, you can listen to the whole show on the app, and they're like, where's X Factors? And I said, it's a football thing. And then I thought about it, and I talked to you guys, and we're like, let's do an Orioles X Factors, right? Like, because the people want X Factors. So we're going to have an Orioles season X Factors next here on The Fan. Oh, thanks, Harbs. It's baseball season, but always good to hear from John. X-Factor time. We do this every Friday during Ravens football season, assuming they play on a Sunday. But this is Orioles X-Factors, and I sort of did it pitchers and everyday and position players. I don't know how you guys did this exercise, but that's how I kind of broke it down. I have two pitchers and two everyday players.
Yeah, I've got a mix. Really, I've got a mix. Day. Yeah,
I just mean position players.
Yes, yeah,
position
yeah.
players. Yeah. I will start. One of my guys is an everyday player, my position players, and that's Cedric Mullins. Cedric Mullins, if he can, and again, one game, but if he can be the guy that he was the last 40 games of the last season, I think that can be a huge X factor for this team, this lineup, for the Baltimore Orioles.
I went with a guy in a similar situation. I guess he's got one more year of control than Cedric, who plays a position where I think even more so other guys could play it right now, have played it right now. Whereas with Cedric, you've got Kalzer, who's played center field, but that's real. And Laureano, I guess.
Yeah.
But I went with Ryan Mountcastle. What is he? What do they think he can be? How much does his ability to play first base, a non-premium position, better than other guys, hold off other guys if he does have a slow start? We all know that's where Kobe Mayo, like, if there's going to be a right-handed hitting first baseman from within who's on this team 2 years from now, it's Kobe Mayo, not Mountcastle. He's well-liked, and he should be. He's a great kid. I don't know what his future is. And I'm surprised he hasn't been traded already.
Yeah, I'm with you on that part.
I had Cedric Mullins as well, Ken, for the same exact reasons. But my second one, Heston Kjerstad. This is a big, 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 big year for Heston Kjerstad. 26 years old now. Unfortunately, his career, it's been setback after setback, whether it's health or injury. But it seems like, even though we haven't seen him in the starting lineup the first two games of the season, it seems like he will get more runway this year. Are we going to see the power? He had the great outfield assist yesterday. Yeah. How much are they going to trust him in the field? This is a massive year for Heston Kjerstad.
I've got one other position player, and for me, it's Jorge Mateo. Because if Jorge Mateo is where he was before he got hurt, then he's two players in one. And I think with this pitching staff, which we'll get to in a minute, it's going to be more quantity than quality, and they're going to need to be patching things up in the bullpen and optionable guys going up and down. And if you count Jorge Mateo as basically a backup outfielder and a backup infielder as one, then you might be able to get by for parts of this season with less of a bench. And I think they're going to need that because I think it's going to be all hands on deck pitching-wise, starting rotation and bullpen.
Jason, we are simpatico. My second position player is Jorge Mateo for all the reasons that you mentioned. We'll go to pitching. I put Sagano in here because I don't know what to expect. If he can be good, if he can give them a 4 ERA and 12 wins, I think that they would be doing handstands.
Yeah, if you got $1 million a win out of him, and I mean a 4 ERA, I think they'd 4-5. I think they'd sign up for right now. I mean this has feast or famine potential.
I've never seen him throw an actual pitch in MLB yet. The spring training doesn't count, of course. And yeah, he is the ultimate X factor on this team, quite frankly, because he's their number four pitcher with me and Dean pitching tomorrow. But yeah, he's going to be counted on all year long.
The other one for me was Albert Suarez. Like, what is he? I want him in the bullpen. I feel like at some point he's probably going to start for them because they love him there. But I think he can be incredibly valuable for them no matter where they put him.
I had two other pitchers. One, Keegan Aiken. You know, no more Colom. Like, are they as good from the left side as they were before? Is Aiken a candidate for regression, or has he unlocked something? And again, we don't think these starters are going that long, and having him to piggyback from the left side after all these right-handed starters. And I mean, other than Povich, who are like, there's not a whole lot of left-handed arms in this system. Rogers is a sunk cost. Mm. Who knows when he's coming back? So I think Aiken's really important. And Felix Bautista, is an X factor. A closer coming back from that kind of injury.
Yep.
That can be tough. I also think attendance is an X factor, and I think this ownership group is an X factor.
Interesting. Coming up next, Twib Notes. What happened in the division yesterday? We know about the Orioles and the Blue Jays, but what about the Yanks and the Red Sox and the Rays? Well, we will update you Twib Notes next here on The Fan.
William Abreu. High fly shot deep into the alley. That's way back there, and that ball is gone. It is out of here. Abreu again. Sox break it open. A 3-run laser beam.
Wilder Abreu, his second home run of the game, helping the Red Sox defeat the Rangers 5-2 yesterday. And tie game at the point of the second one. Chapman, their new guy, I guess he's going to be their closer.
He's their closer for now.
Yeah, he gets the win in this one. And the Red Sox win in Arlington.
Abreu's an interesting guy. He's like one of these StatCast darlings. I mean, you look at the percentage of hard hit balls to contact he makes, and it's pretty obscene. Now, does he make enough contact is a question. That new front office is a little more settled in now. We know that they did some pretty interesting things with their pitching staff last year. He's a kid who could be a factor, and if they really kind of limit him to matchups that they think work best for him, I think he could be a more than competent replacement for O'Neill at a much cheaper price. So he's somebody I'm keeping my eye on with them. It appears that Devers is bought into the DH thing, which makes their infield their infield defense.
Sounds like he's got no choice.
He's going to swing as bad as a DH. Yes. We'll see how that goes. But it certainly makes their infield defense better. And they've got Walker Buehler going. So we'll see, you know, what that looks like. We just talked about Sagano and feast or famine, right? And X factors. Walker Buehler is certainly an X factor for them. Other interesting thing with the Red Sox, who more people seem inclined to be picking to win this division, doesn't sound like Crochet is going to do anything with them. At least not
long term.
Not this season.
He was five innings yesterday, 5 hits, 2 earned, 2 walks, 4 strikeouts. He got the start.
Yeah, I don't think he wants to negotiate in season. So we'll have to see where that goes with him long term. But I look, they're a better team. Do I think their bullpen is going to need work through the course of the year? I absolutely do. But as they get some arms back starting wise, they might be able to push some other dudes into the pen.
Are you buying Chapman as their closer?
No.
Yeah,
Slayton got the save yesterday because if Chapman was in, it was a tie game. By the way, should have been Oriole Nathan Eovaldi, 6 innings. 3 hits, no walks, 2 earned, 9 strikeouts for the Rangers. No decision.
Was it 3 years, $70
million? Yeah, it was like 25 a year, I think. 375.
Would have been nice.
Yeah, it would have been. Let's go to the Yankees. And for the first time ever, they let a catcher off in their lineup. And he started the year off with a bang.
Here's a 2-0. That is ripped into right, back at the wall. See ya! Home run! What a start. Yankees on top, 1-0.
Joe Buck on ESPN shouting out Michael Kay with his see ya call. That was a wall scraper in right field.
It was a pop. Now, Bone called Adley's 440-foot jack
I
a pop-up.
Hoping. Yeah.
Full
I
disclosure.
I was hoping. I had the under in the
full disclosure. Yeah, that happened.
Yeah. It did.
Yeah, that, I also said, almost left the stadium.
I'll own like, it. I was thinking money. I was thinking selfishly.
Yeah. That was, now that Austin Wells homer and the Volpe homer, those were pop-ups that cleared the fence. And also, just if you were listening to the Ben McDonald interview, we were watching Dominguez pitch with no audio on because we were doing the show.
So we didn't know he said
that. Two pitches in, I said, this dude's flying open. I don't like anything I'm seeing here.
You did. And that's what Ben said as well on the broadcast.
So that atoned for Bone calling Adley's.
You get the good, you get the bad.
A pop-up.
And if you missed the Ben McDonald interview, you can always go back on the Odyssey app.
You are on for Friday, Bone.
Yeah.
This
would have been good for a Thursday.
Yes.
Let alone a Thursday. Let alone a Friday.
It's, again, small sample size, one game. Devin Williams.
37 pitches.
Two hits and a walk. Did give up a run, but got the save.
Now, he strikes out Churio, and he strikes out Yelich to end it. Churio.
Five strikeouts. Yeah.
What is that?
That's like
the extreme sombrero?
The platinum sombrero.
Platinum.
Yeah. It's more than the golden.
I guess platinum is about as, it's more than sterling. I guess platinum is like as high sterling, as it goes.
Is sterling a,
sterling cheap?
That's I think yeah. Sterling's cheap.
So platinum sombrero for Churio. Nasty Nestor Cortez faces the Yankees this weekend. He's a Brewer now. If you haven't been paying attention, so that'll be interesting. A lot of people are not that bullish on the Yankees. I'm not that bullish on the Yankees right now. One of these GMs in this division is going to go to lengths that others won't go to try to win this thing. And that may be ultimately what sways it in the end.
Let's finish off with the Rays. And I saw some pictures of that Steinbrenner Field, and they're like putting tarps over certain things to make it the Rays Stadium. But yeah, you still got like Whitey Ford's retired number. It's a bizarre.
Named after the Yankees' longtime owner. We can't change that.
No, it's a bizarre looking thing. But one of the factors, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago, we have no idea what to expect because they were sort of built for the Trop and they're not in the Trop. What do you think of this team as they get started?
I think they'll be better than last year. I think Christopher Morel, this guy 2 years ago with Chicago had like a 900 OPS against lefties. Last year he had like a 560 OPS against lefties. They're batting him in the middle of the lineup. He's got to be what Paredes was. And if that happens, like today, Josh Lowe's batting like seventh. They're clearly trying to take stuff. Like if Lau can come back and be Lau, if Morel is what Paredes was or Rosarena was, not athletically, but just the power bat that strikes out too much. I don't know, man. I buy their pitching. Even with the McClanahan injury, I just buy that they're always developing and cultivating pitching. Like I think they'll be around 500.
But a lot of it's going to be health, right? I mean, that's kind of what derailed them last year.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I don't think it could go as poorly, but like Junior Caminero's got to be like one of the better young players in the American League. And like, I don't know if this Curtis Meade's going to be able to stick, but like they're going to need some kids to stabilize that lineup.
Coming up next, we get back to the Terps, and time for a little bit of necessary roughness for one Kevin Willard. Is he looks like he's got nine toes out the door. We'll update you on what we're hearing, and we'll recap an ugly evening in San Francisco next here on The Fan.
I wanted to spend an extra night in New York this year to celebrate Christmas with my team, and I was told that we can't do that because it's too expensive. I don't know how we can be a top-tier program, and I can't spend one extra night in New York because it's too expensive. So there's fundamental things I'm fighting for my team and my program. It's not so much about me. It seems to, I want to make sure that whatever we do going forward, we're successful and we're successful at the highest rate.
And a life comes at you fast moment. That's when we were Team Willard. We loved when he was like, you know, that like the Maryland's
because we bought that this was actually about the betterment of the program, not just self-serving garbage for him on the way out.
Yeah, exactly.
Not diabolical low road crap slinging.
Speaking of on the way out, Well, you got something.
Well, I was going to say, I almost want to interrupt this necessary roughness to do a necessary roughness about what the hell happened to our intro to necessary roughness.
Yeah, that was.
I like the old one a lot better. I don't know what happened there.
That threw
me off to begin with.
Yes, that was different.
Willard worried about where he's going to spend Christmas. Hey, Punk, spend the rest of your life in Philadelphia. Don't ever come back here. Nobody wants you back in Maryland, bro.
Yeah.
You might have got us with the okie doke 2 weeks ago. We quickly found out that, yeah, you think we're bumpkins, but we're not. Nobody was buying anything you've been selling since. And this was all always about him smearing people on the way out, period. It's not about family decisions. It's not about I haven't talked to my agent. He's known for quite some time. Yeah. He's going to Villanova. And guess what? He coached that team last night like he was already in Villanova.
By the way, if you want to hear the level of his lameness, I guess, for lack of a better term, his comments about his future last night compared to what he said after Seton Hall lost and he was headed to Maryland. Listen to the similarities.
Kevin, there's been a lot of rumors in the last day or so of you potentially going to Maryland. Do you want to kind of comment on whether that's accurate or not?
I'll give you exactly what I can tell you. I have an agent who I haven't talked to yet. I don't know who he's talking to. I have absolutely no idea. But when I get home tomorrow, I'll talk to my agent and discuss things with my agent.
I don't know what I'm doing. I'll just be honest with you. I haven't talked to my agent. I haven't talked to my wife. I made a promise to this team that I was going to just focus on this team, and that's all I've done. So I haven't talked to anybody. I have an agent. I'm sure he's talking to people because that's what agents like to do. But I don't know.
It's the same crap.
He stuck to the script.
Dude, like, who, like, how dumb does he think people are? I mean, what a load of crap. And the fact that he tries to wrap it up in, like, I'm just a super transparent, you know, I just can't
being
help
honest.
Myself. But yeah, I just open my heart up and bleed. I'm bleeding Terps red. I'm bleeding for the program. Dude, how about we all know he wanted Damon Evans out in the worst way.
Yes.
And then last night he's hiding behind, well, we don't have an AD right now. I don't know who I work for. The guy I worked for who hired me left, so I don't know if they even want me here. Shut up. Just go away.
Every answer he had to about his future, he prefaced with, I'm just being honest.
Just being honest. There's nothing honest about this guy.
He's being honest, Kevin.
Yes, he has to remind you.
Yes,
this is not lying, Kevin Willard. This is honest, Kevin Willard. I'm giving you the real scoop here. I'm just being honest. I don't know anything.
And you're going to tell me a guy in that mental state was all up and ready to have these kids fired up to run through walls, to do anything they could for this program last night? Or did they all just see that this thing is ending? It's already kind of over. And I don't know. The bench looked pretty lethargic to me. The coaching staff looked pretty lethargic to me. What could he have possibly said at halftime that made anything better? I would have fired his ass at halftime.
Oh, I told you, I found Gary Williams and gotten him to coach the game last night. But that's just
one of the assistants.
Yeah,
I mean,
David
Testudo.
Cox. Yeah,
Testudo.
Coach Kermit. By the way,
Kermit.
Can I just say kudos to whoever put those pictures of Kermit the Frog in a suit coaching
AI.
Random Maryland players? It was absolutely brilliant. Thank you. That gave me a laugh.
And kudos to Willard, who memed himself. That whole "I don't know anything about anything." That's everywhere now.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know what I'm doing is a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. That's how I'm going to remember him.
I do. Before we step out, Beltway Ben, we have not heard from you yet. How are you feeling about Kevin Willard at this moment?
I think he's the biggest scumbag on the planet right now. Just to be completely honest. And you guys know me. I'm very calm.
Oh, you're being honest?
I don't say a lot of bad words. Like, I'm very calm.
No.
Watching that second half yesterday.
I was dropping
some bad words in front of that TV yesterday. He wanted no parts of coaching that game in the second half. The adjustments that Rothstein and everybody always praise him for, I didn't see damn adjustment all night. They come out of halftime, look dry. He pulls the starters before Florida did. And the game was probably over, whatever. He threw in the white towel before Florida did. He's a loser. He's a clown. I will root against Villanova forever. And it sucks because our reaction makes it seem like they're getting a home run higher, but that's not what it is. It's just the way the coward went out. He's a loser, and I think Maryland. We'll figure it out.
By the way, I love that for two reasons. Number one, you brought it, and I respect that. Number two, you really are part of the show as family. You mixed metaphors there by throwing in the white towel, which is something that we do all the time. So, well done.
You also became very fond of a word that
I
doubt was in his vocabulary.
Yes.
Before he started working with us,
it was.
I can't think it was as much a part of his vocabulary.
Yeah. No,
he's a big Game of Thrones fan.
I think it has become much more of a go. It's become your four seam fastball, and I respect you for it.
Coming up next,
it used to be like his sixth pitch. It was like Sagano's splitter
circle.
Yeah, now it's four seam.
It
should be used as a four seam.
Yeah. It's chin music. He's bringing it. Greg Peterson.
And we're sending him to Philadelphia. Yeah. Whenever Villanova, the first cupcake they play, where hopefully there's only 1,500 people in the stands.
Clarification. Villanova ain't in Philadelphia. It's on the mainline suburbs.
Whatever.
It was like 10 miles from my high school.
How far is Villanova from Philadelphia?
About 25 minutes.
Would you call it a Baltimore suburb?
Bro, it's a Baltimore suburb.
If Reading is basically a suburb of Baltimore, I'm sorry. Villanova's a Philly school. Get used to it.
It's right there on the main line, baby. Hey, coming up next, Greg Peterson. We got the second night of the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight coming up this weekend. Where's he putting his money? We'll ask him. He's from VSiN. He joins us next.